Blog it's Talk 4 Radio. O'clock.
Oh, yeah. Hello, we'd like to welcome everybody to this edition of Episode On Point. I'm your host, Don Allen, here with Mr. Ron Edwards.
Hey, good afternoon, Don. Beautiful day here in the Twin Cities. My brother, a lot of functions, a lot of activities going on. Heritage Day, some kind of Heritage Day activities up around the U.S. Post Office on Laurie. And all the politicians out talking in terms of the wonderful things they're going to do. So, you know, this is a period of wonderfulness, if you will. But go ahead.
Yeah. Another election cycle, another group of promises of how focused they're going to be on the blighted area of North Minneapolis. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. More contracts than ever before, if you will. Let there be justice. By the way, unfortunately, tragically, first time in a month, another homicide, and another young African-American loses their life in a yet-to-be-unsolved homicide, 3,000 block Colfax Avenue North, and about four blocks away, the mayor and Inspector Mike Martin and all of them were receiving a $15,000 check for the local residents of the community, the block captains, et cetera. The majority of them are white, by the way. For a crime-free neighborhood, which is kind of puzzling. But anyways, as they were receiving the check, shots fired, rung out, and a 20-year-old African-American lay dead in the street in North Minneapolis. And the battle has begun.
Yes, and also there was a little bit of controversy behind that because I guess originally they thought, and passerbyers thought, that it was a Caucasian gentleman who had been shot, and I guess they were quick to call a press conference.
Yes, they were, Mr. Allen. You got on top of that one. Initially, when the deceased was laying in the street, the name, we're not at liberty to divulge the name at this point because next of kin has not been contacted. Per se, the individual's a very, very, very fair-skinned mixed race individual, except he was wearing cornrows. But initially, when the policia federales arrived, they thought he was a Caucasian. They thought initially that he had been carjacked, and that a bunch of Negroes had taken his car and shot and killed him in the middle of the street. And in fact, because many of the white residents in that area along the 3,000 block on Colfax thought that a white person had been shot and killed by black vigilantes, if you will. The chief and the department made an immediate decision to call a press conference and make sure that the right coded information got out, that this was not a Caucasian that had been shot and killed as it pertains to the atmosphere. But what happened for a period of time of almost 35 to 40 minutes, the police also, not only with their computers, they have almost like a telegraph kind of instrument in their car, and they actually tap information out. And the area was not secure, and that's normally a goal that, that black suspects are being looked at. It took them a while to secure the area or to withdraw. The area is not secure. Alert, if you will, is the proper term that's referred to. And then there was a greater comfort level a little bit later on when it was realized that the deceased was not a Caucasian. Okay?
Yes.
We appreciate you being on top of that, bringing that up.
Yeah, I did. I went ahead and our sources contacted us right away during the event and kind of let us know what was going on with the spin over there in North Minneapolis, the police department, and them scuffling because, like you said, they thought it was a white gentleman getting carjacked. And of course, we don't get as Minneapolis black folks, we don't get reasonable consideration when our people are killed in the streets. There's no press conference. There's not even press conferences by our own black organization. So,
you're talking about,
not even our own organizations get together and say, hey, talk to the family. And it's not a good thing. And, we wish this gentleman's family the best, and it was a tragic situation, but, we're going to have to come to terms here as a community and deal with some of this stuff head on.
Well, by the way, on that particular note of continued tragedies here in our metropolitan area, a young man who we unfortunately indicated two 2 weeks ago, would in fact be identified and declared dead. Mr. Smith, who was tasered to death by white police officers in the lobby of the downtown, the local downtown YMCA here in Minneapolis, particularly for our international and nationwide audiences, the level of police terror here. But anyways, Mr. Smith was taken off life support yesterday. Small article way over in the corner of the page, this morning's edition of the paper, next to the last page. He was taken off life support. But, interesting enough, in the article, again, for those who talk in terms of we are naysayers and et cetera, as we had reported here on Point 2 weeks ago, the family confirms that they have been told and has been confirmed to them that their loved one, 28-year-old Mr. Alfonso Smith, was, in fact, tasered while handcuffed. And so
yes.
This would be the second, and tragically, both individuals' last names are Smith. By the way, the authorities basically will use that to create confusion. You know, you'll have people talking in terms you don't know what you're talking about. The family confirms in this morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune that they were made aware. Now, here's the piece that has been at work for the last 10 or 12 days. And
we have to analyze this. Yeah. Go ahead.
What happened was is that there needed to be time to do the right thing by the security cameras. As you know, the downtown Y is in a very modern building. You remember they tore down and built a big, pretty new building a couple years ago. Well, that building has all of the security features, okay, that goes with the modernization. And the security cameras caught the incident. And so they had to put the so-called witness testimonies in line with what ultimately would show up on the security camera, okay? And that meant that the security cameras had to be altered, if you will. Just as in the case of the 19-year-old Fong Lee in 2006, who was gunned down in the schoolyard by Minneapolis police, shot 8 times. So what has happened, the delay to keep your mind on Mr. Smith being on life support was to get the story, to massage it, as we like to say. And so those security tapes that were the property of the YMCA have been properly sanitized, the word we want to use. And the tapes will now fit the description of of the quote-unquote witnesses. Okay?
Yeah. And our ongoing sources inside of the YMCA, who will remain anonymous, confirmed that the young man was, or the 28-year-old man was, handcuffed and being tased.
Yeah.
And so now if you look at this and analyze this, okay, on September 9th, the man was tased. He died, and the news released that he was revived, okay?
Yeah.
But this whole time he's been on a machine.
Yeah.
You know, and so they clearly waited out, just like you said, to sanitize and do what they had to do to get the story straight, to take him off the machines and let him die. I mean, it's an unfortunate incident.
Yeah. Let me just also remind our listeners that when we first reported this scenario 2 weeks ago, we pointed out that initially the Minneapolis Star Tribune reporters were talking to the chief and getting an interview from Chief Tim Dolan about the tasering death of, at that time they were saying actually he said he was 18 years old, but he clearly is 28. The Star Tribune apparently was approached by a source, if you will, from the Black Journalistic Corps. I mean, I'm going to do it like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're told that they were now being told, this black journalist, that the deceased had been revived at the hospital and was now on life support. The Star Tribune, to their credit, went back to the office of the chief and to the public information officer, Sergeant Palmer, who then said that, yes, you know, hallelujah, that Mr. Smith had been revived at some point or another after arriving at the hospital, understanding that he had been, you know, clearly brain dead for quite some time, and was now on life support and initially was expected to recover. Now, here's what happened. Because their initial intelligence suggested that he was a kind of a homeless person, a recluse, and et cetera, they assumed he had no family. Unfortunate for the city of Minneapolis, and I'm certainly hoping that these folks get a good lawyer and sue, his family, who lives in northern Indiana and outside of Chicago, were immediately notified. They had a representative here, Mr. Larry Smith, immediately began to make inquiry about the circumstances as it pertains to the death of his relative, okay? The family then came here within a couple days. I refer you back to newspaper accounts a couple days later, Minneapolis Star Tribune. They were told he was on life support. They were told his chances were pretty good. They reached out to the NAACP and to the American Civil Liberties Union, Mr. Allen, right?
Yes.
They, specifically the Civil Liberties Union, NAACP really doesn't have much resource. The Civil Liberties Union began to make immediate inquiry, began to question the police reports and et cetera, and supported the information being provided to the Star Tribune by a black journalist that Mr. Smith had been tasered while in handcuffs, okay? And so I'm just hoping that they get the right kind of private counsel, and I hope they sue. By the way, as we said before, this is the second, officially, this is the second young African-American to be tasered to death by white police in our city in the last couple of years.
Well, Mr. Edwards, I would like to take this, you know, by staying on topic, but I would like to take this one step further. Is not the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights duty in their ordinance and their mandate to open up an investigation about this?
As a person who helped write the Civil Rights Ordinance almost 50 years ago, if you will, well, 45, part of our intention in writing and helping to write the Civil Rights Ordinance in 1965-66, department was created in 1967, is that the both the commission and the department would be proactive in situations like this. Now, under my tenure as chairman of the Civil Rights Commission, you know, on two separate occasions over a period of 13 or 14 years, we initiated many, many public hearings. And for anybody, again, that wants to be a naysayer, one of the key members of our commission at that, well, in fact, a couple of key members were the following, and that is current federal Chief Justice of the Federal District of Minnesota, the Honorable Michael Davis, and former judges Pam Alexander and LeJune Lang were members of my special committee. And we had numerous public hearings. And so to your specific question, sir, we, under the ordinance, made sure that the Civil Rights Department and Commission could have initiated a public inquiry and then public examination of what happened. The department and the commission haven't initiated a public hearing in 20 years.
And just for our international, national, and local audience that don't know, the Department of Civil Rights, the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, it oversees the enforcement of the city civil rights ordinance and the Civilian Review Authority ordinance, including investigation into discriminatory practices against members of a protected class and civilian complaints of police misconduct. Okay.
You're reading right from the ordinance, sir.
Right,
yeah,
from the ordinance.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah,
we
and
drafted
so,
that language 40-some years ago. Yes, sir.
And so with that said, things like this, these certain high-profile events, any violation of civil rights is a high-profile event. But in this case, in police brutality or alleged police brutality, misconduct, should turn on a switch automatically within that organization to launch a investigation. Now, I understand that it's hard to investigate someone that's getting the same paycheck from the place you're getting it, you know?
Correct.
But, you know, that's what they're supposed to be doing. But, again, staying on topic, Mr. Edwards, I actually went on Monday morning to down to the Minneapolis Department, or was it? No, it was Tuesday morning, excuse me, down to the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights to file a claim. I was greeted by Ms. Diaz, who told me that they were not taking claims on that this Tuesday because they were going to be in training. I says, oh, okay, well, when are you going to be taking claims? So she made an appointment for me later, you know, a week or so later. So when I left, I was notified by someone else that had went down there that there's a note on the door that said they won't be taking claims all week. Now, if you look at the ordinance or the charter for the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, it says we'll have regularly scheduled hours for intake for the community.
Correct. And as again, as one that served as chairman of the Civil Rights Commission and was involved, as I said, once again, in the writing of the ordinance for the city of Minneapolis, the fact that the department has readjusted the schedule to provide significant prohibition against citizens of this city, particularly citizens of color, from going in and filing a civil rights complaint with the Minneapolis Civil Rights Commission is, in fact, a violation of the Minneapolis ordinance and is a gross misdemeanor under Minnesota law and a gross misdemeanor under federal statute, because it is clearly complicit that the decision has been made to discourage citizens in this city, again, particularly citizens of color, from utilizing the department and the commission, and more importantly than anything, to be able to access the ordinance. And this has been going on for a long, long time, Mr. Allen. In fact, I'm surprised that Ms. Diaz was even at work. In fact, she's probably one of the more frequent absent employees in that department, gone at least 50% of the time absent from her job for any number of reasons, though she's been promoted twice. She started out as a temp, by the way, at the Civil Rights Department 2 years ago and is now a grade level making, I don't know, $50,000 a year. But you hit on a very sensitive point. It's something, though, that leadership has declined to deal with. The mayor and the council will not deal with it. But what you had discovered is a clear violation of the Civil Rights Ordinance. Now, maybe as a part of the examination of the death of Mr. Smith inside the YMCA here in Minneapolis, and the refusal of the director of the Civilian Review Authority, Mr. Samuel Reed, to even address the latest police murder of an African American, maybe someone will decide to ask the U.S. Attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota, who is just across the street from the Civilian Review Authority, Todd Jones, to begin an examination of this clear and concise and well-designed violation of the rights of the citizens of the city of Minneapolis. It's outrageous what's going on. You put your finger on it, sir, when you talked in terms of that there should be a proactive initiative by the department and the commission, and specifically within the department, the Civilian Review Authority. Mr. Reed reports to Velma Corvell, the newly appointed back in May director of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, and none of them have a clue, nor do they have any interest in the pursuit of justice.
Wow, yeah, and I have sent a request for information over to the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, and with five line items, and let's see what happens with that. And I also did get a call from the city attorney, and he assures me that we'll have this information by this time next week.
I will bet you a steak dinner that you will not receive information. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, as I'm sitting with my co-host, Mr. Allen, this is a request you made a number of weeks ago, a couple months ago, didn't you? And
almost.
Ms. Carvell refused to provide that information under state law. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is correct. I also went on the approach. See, we have another group here, the Council on Black Minnesotans.
The who? The what?
Okay. I know.
Is that a church group or what?
I thought it was.
Oh, I thought you said the Ecumenical Council on Black Minnesotans. Oh, I'm sorry. This is a political group, a state
group? Political group, yeah.
The
Council of Black Minnesotans, who, Mr. Edwards, I was shocked. You know, we sit up here in the studio, and while we're doing our thing here, I'm playing around on laptops looking for different stories and things. And
absolutely.
I just said, hey, I'm going to go to the Council on Black Minnesotans website. And I went to the website, and it's www.state.mn.us/portal/mn/jsp/home.do?agency=CPF. Okay? That's the URL. That's their address, okay?
Okay.
And when I got there, I was shocked to see 2010 Martin Luther King Jr. holiday celebration. The fierce urgency of now. Make that change. January 18th, 2010. So I'm like, okay.
What's the date again?
January 18th, 2010.
All right. Mr. Allen, I'm glad you brought that up because I would owe it to the man that carried this for 8 years with great passion and et cetera, the former chairman of the Civil Rights Commission, Mr. Brown, not to be confused with Michael Brown. Mr. Brown, who was unceremoniously removed by Mayor R.T. Ryback because he challenged some of the things that the mayor was not doing, he has informed me, and I apologize to our listening audience, he informed me 3 weeks ago that the basically all-white Civil Rights Commission here in Minneapolis has decided that there will be no Martin Luther King celebration next January.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
There will be. What happened was, and again, the minutes of the Civil Rights Commission can be accessed by any persons having a problem or difference of opinion with what we're saying. The minutes of the last Civil Rights Commission meeting of August could be accessed publicly, if you will, and there you will see a very serious and very rancored debate and discussion about the fact that they had not even put into play the plan for the Martin Luther King celebration. See, one of the key features of the department, and I think you may have seen it in the documents that you're looking at right now via computer, was a beautiful essay contest. Remember that? The essay contest?
Yes.
White folks on the Civil Rights Commission said, we're not interested in hearing about no essays. They said, you know, Martin Luther King thing has been going on for too long. We need to move on to something else. I mean, this is the kind of discussion that we have here in Minneapolis. I mean, you know. And so there, if you go to Monday morning, and by the way, there will be a special council meeting dealing with the budget. Ms. Corvell and her people will be there to talk about more money for themselves, not necessarily for the department, more money for their bonuses and et cetera. You may want to seek out a council member and ask, do they have on their itinerary for January 2011 the site, location, and program for the Martin Luther King event?
Well, this goes back, and I'm glad you reminded me of that with the city, because this also goes back to the 2010-2009 Mayor R.T. Ryback's budget, where he was cutting spending with Juneteenth, Urban League Family Days, Spokesman Recorder, Insight News, and the Hispanic paper, but no mention of Holidazzle, Oktoberfest, anything, Aquitennio, or anything else they have downtown.
Okay.
So this is right on the lines of the master plan, as I put it, where they Minnesota Nice is not Minnesota Nice, and Minneapolis Racist is at an all-time high.
Yes, it is, sir, and it is frightening. Like I said, would not have known about the controversy surrounding the essay contest for the Martin Luther King Day celebration unless I had not run into former Chairman Brown, who, as I said, carried that proposition for 8 years. I mean, he put his heart and soul into that whole essay contest. We had the Minneapolis Public Schools participating, different organizations, and et cetera. The Minneapolis Civil Rights Commission, basically now all white, if you will. In fact, things are so bad down there, they're trying now, they realize that they need to try to recruit at least one or two black Americans to pretend to serve. But they indicated that the time has passed by the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. We don't need to continue to hear about that. And so there will be no essay contest, and there will be no Minneapolis Civil Rights Department / Commission Martin Luther King celebration in our beloved liberal city.
Wow. Well, not a good thing. Not good at all.
No. Mr. Allen, if I could, need to give us a quick update on an issue we first brought to the attention of our international and domestic audience. People probably thought that, again, we were just kind of making it up. Remember we talked in terms of the very interesting role played by some in our ecumenical community in the days following Hurricane Katrina?
Yes.
And what I had done is that I had waited to see if there would be any challenge, any criticism from, you know, some of the usual suspects. I want to indicate that we have found some rather interesting information that talks in terms of payments and et cetera that were made through military entities, if you will, as an outgrowth of the role that was played here in Minnesota with respect to the evacuation of New Orleans and the placement, if you will, or displacement of African Americans coming out of New Orleans. You know, we talked about that. I think it was our second program on the air here. We reported that a large number of African Americans were quietly taken to Camp Ripley, which is the National Guard facility here in the state of Minnesota, way up northern Minnesota, again, for our international and national listeners, deep in the woods, if you will, but it is a military facility, if you will. Large number of African Americans were bivouacked there, some who apparently no one can find out what happened to them. But anyways, what we have done is taken a look at information coming out of a meeting on September 10th, 2005 at Redeemer Baptist Church. You know where Redeemer is here in South Minneapolis?
Yes, yes, yes.
And it was a meeting agenda, and it was hosted. I won't name the minister. He no longer is affiliated with the Black Baptist Convention, but he's affiliated. He knows who he is. But one of the highlights was the presentation and remarks by the Minnesota Army National Guard by Major John Morris.
Okay.
And the configuration, we first reported this, like I said, what is this, our 12th program 10 weeks ago?
Yes.
Which laid out the operational configuration for African Americans that were going to be brought in here and bivouacked and headquartered, well, not headquartered, located at Camp Ripley. And it's very interesting, and it was a nice employment piece
mm-hmm.
for some of those in our community who were leaders. And as we reported 10 weeks ago, so if anybody decides to challenge us, not only do we have the report, but we have the name of the individual who was assigned the position of coordinator for these activities and the relief column, quote unquote, that went to New Orleans and was involved in the placement, if you will, of African Americans in northern Minnesota for a particular period of time. Okay? And the report, by the way, hospitality subcommittee reports kind of reminded me of some stuff I used to read about how the Nazis used to do at the concentration camps. Hospitality, key word, right?
Yeah.
And the report was submitted on September 10th, 2005. And we just wanted to come back to that because there has been a lot of stuff on CNN and et cetera, right, about Katrina and how things are going.
Yes.
And nobody talks in terms of the significant number of African Americans who were forced out of New Orleans, relocated, never to be heard from again. Okay, just wanted to kind of do that. All right?
Okay, well, we got it there. Another thing I'd like to bring up also here is we have the Minneapolis Public Schools and the new headquarters building, but we got to play the bells here.
Yes, play it again, please. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
Okay.
I just love my sound effects. If I can stop here. There we go.
All right, then.
But the Minneapolis Public Schools headquarters, it's very interesting because we covered this a couple of weeks ago on one of the On Point where the Minneapolis Urban League had a meeting there with Mortenson Construction with the representatives from the ecumenical communities and some other folks in there and talk in terms of giving out or having contracts with community partners to monitor inclusion or African Americans or people.
Diversity, as they like to call it. Diversity.
Yeah, diversity is a better word. Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I have asked Miss Littlejohn to come on the air and kind of explain that so that
Miss Littlejohn is who and with whom?
She's with Mortenson Construction Community Affairs personnel, and I wanted her to come on air to explain that. Matter of fact, Our call-in number is 1-877-572-4288. If anybody's out there affiliated with Mortensen that can give a statement, please call us. 1-877-572-4288.
And by the way, I think at the end of the program last week, we indicated that we'd be reaching out to Ms. Littlejohn, who you had conversations with earlier last week, who had been somewhat hostile to some of the inquiries you had made. I apologize, Mr. Allen. Continue right on.
Yeah, and so my thing is, after carefully looking at some examples on how diversity is measured on a site in a sensitive area, in a sensitive situation, of course, again, I have to reference the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, who one of the line items that I sent down there is that I want to see the number of site checks that they did on the Twin Stadium and the University of Minnesota Stadium and the reports that were generated out of those site checks. And so you might be buying me a steak dinner, Mr. Edwards, but anyway, getting back on point here is that through my research, I found out that this takes an effort of not just driving down to the job sites and counting the dark-skinned people working. This is a significant, detailed payroll-watching process. So my question to these people that are community partners is, what company will you be using to monitor diversity on the Minneapolis Public Schools headquarters site? Because I know that you know that I know that you don't have the wherewithals to monitor on an Excel spreadsheet and check payroll hours. The only way that you can tell that they're making their diversity numbers is, well, there's two ways both of them have to be confirmed: eyeballs and paychecks.
Yeah. Okay?
And if your payroll doesn't match, like there's still some hollering going on about the Twin Stadium, but if the payroll doesn't match, if Tyrone Black is not on the payroll, but he's seen out at the job, there's a discrepancy there. So again, my question is, what company will they be hiring to do this work? Because
my understanding is that was a part of what was discussed in a very kind of stealth closed meeting on the 29th of June at Mortensen, where the plan and the strategy was laid out, and we do understand now at this hour that the Minneapolis School District, not necessarily any board members or et cetera, but that the Minneapolis School District Administration agreed to a very questionable format that will, in fact, disguise significant pass-through of contracts. Now, as some of our listening audience knows who are involved with construction and monitoring and enforcement and et cetera, pass-throughs are when you go get somebody like, let's say your brother, okay? And you bring your brother in for a piece of the action, and your brother comes away with $2.2 million and, let's say, passes $2 million back to the white prime contractor and puts $200,000 in his pocket, okay? We had that done by one of our insurance brokers on the county jail. Oops. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And just so that folk don't get upset about that, you know, we have not repeated the name for 7 or 8 years. We wanted to purposely see if someone would kind of challenge us. And, of course, the company that our insurance friend broker passed the money back to for allegedly being the largest minority contractor on the Hennepin County Jail was McLean. Okay.
Ooh.
Many of their employees, by the way, were killed in that tragedy in New York City at the towers. But that's how pass-through works, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a significant amount of pass-throughs on the Twin Stadium, less on the TCF, and the reason for the TCF, because the University of Minnesota never even had to bother to come in with a diversity plan, okay? And, of course, Mortensen made sure that they didn't apply any pressure. Now, in the case of the Twin Stadium, because of enabling legislation, if you will, and specific identification of a monitoring entity, that being the Attorney General, et cetera, they had to, quote-unquote, you know, play the game. In the case of the new district headquarters, which, by the way, will not be owned, Mr. Allen, as you uncovered in a very high-powered candidates forum a couple weeks ago, along with your colleagues, is that the Minneapolis Public School District and, by extension, the taxpayers will not own the district headquarters on the 1200 block, 1250 West Broadway is supposed to be the address, will not own that facility for 20 years. Am I correct?
You are correct. You are absolutely correct. That and that opens up another can of worms. It's like, who will open it? I also sent a request for information. See, one of the things that we have is the federal government's Data Privacy Act, and they have to comply and have to give you some kind of answer. And I did send a request for information over to the Minneapolis Public School District to Dan Lowenson. Actually, I sent it to Stan Allen, the Director of Communications, and he forwarded it to Dan Lowenson to get me that information. I asked a couple more questions on there because I'm trying to find out who is the pass-through, as you just mentioned, is going to be. Which nonprofit? Is it going to be Callis Community Partners? Is it going to be the Ackerberg Group? Is it going to be the Peace Foundation? Is it going to be NAS? Is it going to be Don Samuels himself, councilman here in Minneapolis? Is it going to be
The North Side Achievement Zone?
North Side Achievement Zone. Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out what prime nonprofit is going to be the pass-through and hold those millions.
Mr. Allen, I think that it has been determined that it will be Catalyst.
Okay. So if that's the case, another question, Mr. Edwards, you were there also with me when I asked, does Stu Ackerberg or the Ackerberg Group have anything to do with the Minneapolis Public School Headquarters District Building, headquarters? And the answer from the gentleman from Mortensen and from Ms. Littlejohn was no.
Correct.
Yep. So I took it upon myself to pull the articles and corporations for the Callis Community Partners. Lo and behold, one of the incorporators with their name signed on the signature block is Stu Ackerberg.
Yes, sir.
Which makes, you know, the red flags go up. I says, well, why would you? I mean, first of all, they treat you with no respect. They think you're ignorant when you go in there and talk to them. And, you know, we've done our homework. We see this stuff. You can't tell me that Mr. Ackerberg is not going to have, or the Ackerberg Group is not going to have anything to do with this district headquarters when he's one of the incorporators or board members of this group. His name's on the paper.
Absolutely. And that was the reason for the meeting on 29 June of 2010 at Mortensen's headquarters to begin to put into place the pass-through cover-up, if you will. And, I mean, the decisions have been made. Now, here's the thing that's troubling. And, by the way, let us make sure that we give the telephone number again. This is an opportunity for people to raise questions to Blog Radio, to On Point, to the commentators with respect to authenticating the information that we are providing. I don't think we'll get any calls. But it makes all the sense in the world that this is what is at play, if you will. There will be no employment for African Americans. The kickbacks, pass-throughs, as we said, are already in place. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Allen, in the last 12 days, you have been lied to as a journalist, African-American journalist here in Minneapolis, about the fact that the contracts have already been let. And, in fact, 3 weeks ago on these programs, we talked in terms that couldn't be possible because demolition of the current of buildings on the site has to commence based on the schedule approved by the City of Minneapolis Enforcement Department, has to start the second week in October. Is that not also correct?
That is correct. I'm actually digging through the studio files right now here because I have put that booklet away because the mechanical and electronic has already been let. So I just want to, this might be it right here. Anyway, make a long story short, now something was supposed to happen on September 23rd.
Correct.
And so I don't know what that is right off, but as we continue to go here, I'm going to look for that that pass out, that the book that they passed out at the Minneapolis Urban League meeting, that, again, another top secret.
Let me say what I think that you'll find. That information had to do with pre-bid conferences, okay?
Yes.
Which have already taken place. Now, I, on this end, made inquiry of the district about 10 days ago and asked for specific information with respect to the pre-bid conferences because, as you remember, back in June, we asked Mr. Burgess specifically. Mr. Burgess is identified by the district as the keeper of the seal, if you will. In other words, all things pertaining to the construction go through his office. Mr. Burgess is an African-American, former principal, if I'm not mistaken, out in Warrensburg. We asked Mr. Burgess to identify for us who the bonding and insurance entities would be. You remember that?
Yes, I do.
And he was going to have that information back to us, unrestricted, if you will, unimpeded, if you will, by the 11th or 12th, no later than 12th of June, okay? Mr. Burgess and others refused to respond to the National Research Institute, which is one of the entities that we are using and facilitating, and its attorneys. They have refused to provide the information. The reason that we did that in February of this year, working closely with a group of black insurance underwriters, we made inquiry to the district with respect to the bid process and how these African-American insurance underwriters who were operating both here and in Atlanta, Georgia, through respected clearinghouses, could have an opportunity to bid on insurance and bonding for this large project, right? The contracts were lit for insurance and bonding. No African-Americans were allowed to submit anything, okay? Now, that is as far back as February. As you remember, in that meeting at the Capri Theater, when we asked the question, we were told that nothing had been done at this point. There were no bids out. They were still talking about greenery and designing the park benches and the cafe and et cetera. Remember that?
Yes, yes.
Well, they moved full blast ahead. Everything is in place, including the actual final construction of the facility.
And then, excuse me, and they don't bother to, and then that's what I understand, you know, for all the stuff that we do here on the Air, Mr. Edwards, to try to get the attention of some folks and ask them what's going on so we can distribute information out to the general public, I mean, they just don't seem like they want to give any information out.
You're absolutely correct, and I don't know what you can do. I mean, I do, but I'm not going to say it over the air.
Okay. And then secondly, if I was people like Tracy Williams from the Spokesman Recorder, Al McFarland from Insight News, and folks like that, with all the money that's changing through hands with all these meetings, funded meetings that are going on, I haven't seen an ad for any of this stuff in any of those two primary black papers here in town, including the African News Journal. Nowhere. And so you don't know what's happening, when it's happening. You know?
Well, let me say this again, particularly for our domestic and particularly for our international audiences. You have done an excellent job on a piece of investigative work that talks in terms of a meeting that took place just in the last, 10 days in Washington, D.C., involving some of our local leaders who quietly went out to a black caucus fall extravaganza, correct?
Yes, yes. The Black Caucus Corruption Caucus, what I call it.
Right. Yeah. And in a meeting that they had in Washington, D.C., this is for our local folks here, in a meeting in Washington, D.C., they were talking in terms of how the cut-up would be made with respect to certain monies that would be coming into Minnesota that would be waylaid, if you will, and not redirected into the African-American community, a community which is hurting severely, if you will. Now, this meeting took place, my friends, in Washington, D.C. In fact, I'm told by some that some of the brothers actually paid and to have a photo op with President Barack Obama. Is that consistent what we're hearing out of Washington and our operatives there?
Yes, it's consistent to what's going on. There's been a kind of a backlash here with the usual suspects with some payouts that have happened before they even left and when they got out to. And I'm not mentioning any names right now.
No, we're not mentioning any names. No,
okay,
we're not slandering anybody.
They know who they are. And so when they got out to D.C. and found that person X had gotten a particular amount of in the hundreds of thousands and did not distribute it through his usual network, he was snubbed during the process. We're going to have actually a full report here next Saturday on the events that took place out in D.C. and the group that Congressman Keith Ellison allegedly went out there with. And that's also pretty interesting. And how Oberstar, our federal representative.
From the 8th Congressional District, Northern Minnesota, yeah. Who is also chairman of the powerful Transportation Committee of the House.
Okay. Yeah, how he demanded that Congressman Ellison get someone up to the room right away. Because our operative actually out in D.C. Laid out the facts for the Minnesota Department of Transportation, and they're wondering why Congressman Ellison hasn't taken care of that. So.
Correct. Now, that ties into the meeting that was held a couple weeks ago at the Urban League, in which mm-hmm. there were three meetings that day. The first one around 9 that morning in the congressman's office dealt with taking care of the DOT problem, Department of Transportation problem. Then at 1 o'clock, there was a meeting with Al Franken, Mark Dayton, to discuss some other additional things. And then there was the so-called leadership meeting at 3 o'clock with candidates for the gubernatorial race here in Minnesota, in which, of course, only Democrat challenger Mark Dayton was invited to, and the Republicans, Horner, Independent, and Emmerich, Republican, were not included. Now, it was in those series of meetings, the first two specifically, and more specifically, the 9 o'clock in the morning meeting, that some of those things began to evolve that you just pointed out to, that operatives that we had in Washington, D.C., who were in the meetings, were able to reveal, and that caused the congressman from the 8th Congressional District, the chairman of the powerful House Transportation Committee, to tell the black congressman out of the 5th Congressional District, get somebody up there and get that taken care of.
Exactly.
That's the way it went.
And we have also intercepted an exclusive email. Mr. Mark Dayton, who is running for governor of Minnesota, has found out about the charades. And see, this is very interesting because I'm actually going to a party tonight with where Mark Dayton will be at, in an intimate group of about 20, 25 people, and I just happened to be invited. And so I really appreciate this. But there were several opportunities, Mr. Edwards, before this point for me to meet Mr. Edwards. I mean, meet Mr. Dayton, excuse me.
Yes, Mark Dayton. Mm-hmm.
The problem was that the people that were at the meeting at the Urban League are saying that, okay, Mr. Edwards and Mr. Allen are pointless. They have
yes,
no
yes,
point.
But that's how we've been identified. Yes.
Yeah, and they don't say anything. So, of course, I'm forwarding information, putting information about Minnesota Department of Transportation that is truthful, factual, with the documentation to back it up. So not until September 16th, which was Thursday, when the Star Tribune comes out with the article, Audit Faults MnDOT for Sloppy Practices, did Mr. Dayton's campaign and Mr. Dayton realize that, okay, that Mr. Edwards and Mr. Allen know exactly what's going on, okay?
Absolutely.
In an email from Mr. Mark Dayton, may I read it, Mr. Edwards?
Yeah.
Okay, it says, this is from Mr. Mark Dayton. As a former Minnesota state auditor and the head of three different state agencies, I was appalled to read the front page story in yesterday's Star Tribune. It said that MnDOT failed to properly safeguard $55 million in receipts and cited other serious management failures. Even worse, it was the second time in 3 years that the agency was cited for sloppy management of state funds by the legislative auditor. This is yet another failure of sound management practices and financial controls by the Valenti administration, which professes to believe government should be run like a business. And I'll stop there. But now he's very concerned. Because
now, let me say on that particular point, I'm really disappointed in the gubernatorial candidate, and this reason is there over the summer were three articles positioned by the Star Tribune who realized that this DOT thing was taking place. In fact, one of the articles, a very short article, about 500 words, pointed out that a group of African Americans had gone out to Richfield, which is a suburb just adjacent of Minneapolis to the south, had gone out to Richfield and on a so-called DOT project on what is called Crosstown, a large RTO route, that there had been a demonstration. Now, prior to that, there had been two additional articles with respect to the criticism about DOT, and some of it had emerged as an outgrowth of the light rail controversy that has also emerged here in which there will be no jobs for African Americans, though the light rail is going to go up and down and through Minneapolis and et cetera. And so I'm disappointed that the controls, if you will, for the gubernatorial candidate would make it appear that Mark Dayton, who's a very bright man, I've known Mark all his life, that he just now realized that this was going on. That's somewhat disingenuous. That's just not consistent with the facts.
Yeah, and excuse me, I agree 100%. And another piece, you just mentioned the light rail. Next week on the 23rd at UROC, University of Minnesota's Urban Research and Outreach Center, they're having a light rail meeting again. Another dog and pony show with Representative 58B, Bobby Joe Champion. And I've been following, Mr. Edwards, I've been following this e-democracy really closely because there's a guy named Ray on there. And I have to give Ray a whole lot of credit.
Okay.
Ray is a white guy, well-educated, very smart. And there's been a whole thread of comments on e-democracy saying that say no to the light rail running down this street or that street. And so Ray breaks it down. He says, you know what, you're fooling yourself because they're going to run it right through Worth Park where the rails are over there in North Minneapolis. They're not going to see nothing. That's why North Minneapolis is not going to see any jobs.
That's right, because if you run through Worth Park, you come right up behind the Target Center.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And this was also something discussed by Welch Construction. Because if you remember, Mr. Edwards, about a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, Welch purchased, and I might be just, I'm looking for the internet, but I think it's Welch or Mortenson, but I'm looking on the computer now, just so one of those two names, so don't hold me to it right now.
Okay.
But was owned the deed to the land over there between downtown Minneapolis and Penn Avenue along 394. Okay. Yeah. There was discussion made about a light rail station going there where the new Viking Stadium would go.
Viking Stadium was being talked about specifically. They had broke the identification down to the area across the street from the Munsingware, or now referred to as International Market Square. You're absolutely correct. That land, in fact, we understand it has been purchased. There's a tad of a political sensitivity because in that particular area is the Minneapolis impound lot.
Exactly. And that's the thing that they were bringing up, that the impound lot would close down and those houses and that park would be gone. And they put the football stadium right there. And
that's correct. That's correct.
Now, if the football stadium lands there, I have it on film where the representative says, no, we're not going to build a stadium there. That's what he said. But then they have the pictures and the diagrams of this stadium sitting right there. I'm like, well, why show people that if that's not what you're planning? I mean,
and what's at play on that is that there is this, the city knows, and if we could ever find that out, that we would break it wide open. The city already knows who the architectural firm is that was contracted with to begin the architectural designs for the stadium, if you will. Now, let me just say on this particular point, again, for our domestic and international audiences. First of all, let me do it from my end here. Our phone number, 1-877-572-4288. Again, 1-877-572-4288. Don and Ron, if you will, On Point, Blog Radio. If you have any questions, feel free to call in. Now, going back to what you had talked about, one of the other discussions that is going on how some funding can take place for, you know, political representatives is through a group that has emerged called Impact.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Okay. Now, Impact is supposedly a political entity, kind of long for those of you in, you know, Detroit or Chicago specifically, maybe even Atlanta, definitely Kansas City, places like that, is kind of like a political club, if you will, that is put together and will be a kind of a resource and fundraiser for elected African-American or black elected officials. Am I correct?
You are correct. I actually have that on the front page, the story there. Excuse me. It's on the front page of our on-demand on Blog Talk radio page on our homepage. It's Kyle Impact. What do they do?
You can
You can actually see the video, though, at IBNNnews.com. That's IBNNnews.com. I had a chance, Mr. Edwards, to I was tipped off by someone that this agency didn't have a phone, and they were only open 3 days a week, and I needed to
sound like civil rights department, but go ahead.
Yeah. And so to drop by there on a Saturday. I said, Saturday? And so I walked into the office, and a lot of people asked, could they help me? And I saw someone that I knew. Well, she'll remain nameless, but I ended up interviewing the executive director, Corey Day.
Corey Day.
And so he went on record saying that, you know, he is, and you need to watch the video because I just want to read this. Most Minnesota nonprofit articles and corporation or bylaws state no substantial part of activities of the corporation shall constitute the carrying on or propaganda or otherwise attempting to influence legislation or in any part initiative or referendum before the public, and the corporation shall not participate or intervene, including by publication or distribution of statements, in any political campaign on behalf of or opposition to any candidate for public office. Okay?
Okay.
Now, with that said, now I like Mark Dayton. I want Mark Dayton to become governor of Minnesota, okay?
All right, okay.
But if you're running a PAC or a 501c3 or a nonprofit, you can't say that you're telling people to vote for, you want people, you're working on behalf of Mark Dayton's campaign or Mark Dayton. You know, you can't. And I also asked him, I says, well, have you reached out to the Republicans, the Greens, and the Independents? You know, because they're there also.
That's right.
And he says, no. So in the video, you'll see my little pop-ups where I said DFL only, and some other comments that I made while he was talking, because you cannot have in a state of Minnesota a PAC that's DFL-driven just because a couple of DFL elected black officials signed off on it, okay?
We're being told here in the Twin Cities that that is, in essence, what is happening. It becomes clear to me, Mr. Allen, that that was really what was driving the meeting at the Urban League, who, by the way, their 501c3 is now threatened by that particular meeting in their facility. It's clear that the PAC group known as Impact was really driving this meeting for the election of Democratic gubernatorial challenger Mark Dayton, and probably explains why everyone was so comfortable with not inviting the other major parties. By the way, just for again, we have a Green Party member on our city council. We have 12 Democrats and one Green Party, have had for the last almost decade. And so when Mr. Allen points out Green Party here in the Twin Cities, we do not take that lightly. But I think that what you have discovered this morning in facilitating that meeting at a facility that I think it's along the 1500 block of West Broadway, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it is.
With no landline phone, but is identified as a PAC group. It just ties into the discussions that took place in Washington, D.C., during the fall session of the Black Congressional Caucus or Black whatever that they were talking about, of how some deals need to be cut. I'm just saddened by it because, in the meanwhile, the African-American community in Minnesota, particularly the Twin Cities, is, I mean, literally starving to death.
Yes, and I just wanted to let you know also, along those lines of folks trying to do their own thing, we have a situation, Mr. Edwards, here in the Twin Cities with the League of Women Voters.
Okay.
The League of Women Voters executive director is Keisha Gaskins. She has sent me an email that said that she will not let the other candidates participate in the October 2nd KSTP debate. Basically, what they're going to have is Congressman Ellison, Republican GOP endorsed candidate, which is Joel Demos, involved in this forum. Well, I received, and this is breaking news exclusively from On Point, I received a telephone call from independent candidate for the House of Representatives, Michael Calvin, who said that this debate will be disrupted if they don't get invited.
Okay, all right, so and needs to be, because there is a certain buggishness, if you will, amongst many of the Democrats with respect to how they're going to run things, and it is kind of terrifying, because then if you allow a bunch of thugs to run and manage campaigns and elections and et cetera, then you never have an honest inquiry when you see your community hurting, if you will. Interesting. Impact, by the way, want to keep that out there in front of our friends. Impact, a new political PAC group, if you will, operating out of a facility along the 1500 block of West Broadway in North Minneapolis, and they're getting ready to be the conduit that will funnel the money to the elected officials.
Yes, exactly. I wanted to, I'm looking on the blog here because there was something that came up.
Go ahead. Okay. Then we'll come back to me. Go ahead.
Okay, the Jordan Area Community Council, you know, the vice
chair. Now, is that the group in which the vice chair referred to the children of African Americans as rats?
Yeah, he basically said, what he said was that rats are better than blacks because rats know who their mothers and fathers are.
Now, this man is the vice chair to the chairman of the Jordan Neighborhood Group, who is the director of investigations for the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, Michael Kip Brown. Is that right?
That is correct. That is correct.
And this gentleman in question that you're talking about has been very pointed in his denunciation of the African-American community, as Mr. Allen just quoted, referring to African-American children as akin to rats.
Exactly.
Not being as better than rats, if you will. Okay.
Yeah. And I'd just like to give a thank you to the Jordan Hochman Group for keeping up the pressure on that group of people and what they call the NOMI, North Minneapolis Terrorists. And there's a whole group of them, so...
Okay.
If anyone's interested, just go to jordanhochman.blogspot.com, and you'll find.
Now that's Hawk, like in Hawk, Hawkman. Yeah. Is that correct?
Hawkman. Hawk.
Hawkman. Okay. All right.
jordanhochman.blogspot.com. Yes.
One other additional piece is, as we just keep moving along, there is an interesting examination. I won't call it an investigation at this particular hour until the announcement is made by the county attorney in this particular locale. There is an investigation going on in Michigan dealing with a school district just north of Kalamazoo, Michigan. The school district, it starts with a C. I'll do it like that. Interesting enough, there is a member of that school district who was a former principal at school there who has appeared here in Minneapolis and is a principal at a Northside school. Left Kalamazoo on a Thursday, drove all night, got here to Minneapolis, and appeared at the school and took over as principal that same day. How does that work, Mr. Allen?
I have it's above my pay grade. So I mean,
our stringers in Michigan, it's you guys on point need to really take a look at this particular situation at this particular school district, which has lost millions of dollars that can't be accounted for. Now, I know there's an explanation, and I know Superintendent Bernadette Johnson, who's a good friend of the person that appeared here out of nowhere and is now a principal in one of our schools. I know there's some explanation, okay, but I understand that there's quite a bit of that going on in the Minneapolis public school system. And I'm like, well, no wonder our children can't get educated.
Yeah, they're moving around chairs on the Titanic.
Yeah, I mean, that's really, and the orchestra is playing, and I guess the orchestra is located at 807, which, for our international and domestic listeners, is the headquarters of the Minneapolis Special School District Number 1, as it is referred to in legal documents. But I'm telling you, the persons came here, the school district in Michigan, north of Kalamazoo, Michigan, is the source of a significant examination by the state of Michigan and its own school board, who apparently is in a state of shock about the fact that it appears that they're insolvent. On that particular point, insolvency, we understand that NERC, the Northside Residents Redevelopment Council, is making a comeback. Is that correct, Mr. Allen, that they are going to be doing some additional and new development in our community?
Yes, you know, we got all these old agencies, including NERC, trying to position themselves as CDCs and for national and international and local, that's community development organizations involved with housing. These are nonprofits trying to be developers. So,
and NERC's been in business for 40 years in our community,
right? 40 years.
Hasn't produced anything, but it's been a lot of money directed towards the African-American community. But go ahead, I'm sorry, because there was some kind of meeting they had at UROC the other night to plan how they're going to BS the black community on, what is it, the meeting on 29th of September?
Yeah, 29th of September to show their new direction. And the meeting was very interesting, Mr. Edwards, because there was no financial data. And if you're going to be transparent with full disclosure, you lay out your financial data, you know. And I also asked the new executive director, whose name slips my mind right now, I said, hey, what happened to the computers and the old files there before the last executive director left? And he had stated, you know, they walked in as a board and took over, and whatever that was there was there.
And the executive director was walking out. That was his exact statement, because we captured it on tape.
Yes, yes.
Was he the same gentleman that ran against current four-term state senator Linda Higgins and had to drop out of the race?
Yes, yes. He was that.
Did he get sick? Was he ill or what happened?
Well, he just got out of prison, or he was, he did get out of prison, and he did some time in prison, and I guess they had leveraged that against him and kind of sent him down and shut him up. This is the Caucasian gentleman that you're talking about that was on the far left at the end.
Yeah, had the dark pullover on and was really waxing and making us black folk understand how stupid and restricted we were with respect to our intellect, right? That's who we're talking about.
Exactly. Same guy.
He just got out the penitentiary, right?
Yes, yes.
Jailhouse
lawyer. So, he figured out that you know, because I had asked him it's an accounting term, of course, what is the ongoing concern of NERC? Which means that are they going to be solvent in the next 12 months? You know, and they sat static. I mean, you have NERC and you have Jack, but more poignant, you want to look at NERC because the Northside NERC, and for those of you who are listening, is the Northside Residents Redevelopment Council. Which executive director was Sherry Pugh she was a director forever almost, and they decided that, you know, a long time ago that they wanted to be developers. So they tried their hand at developing some apartment buildings off Sheridan and Plymouth and
halfway houses
and this is the same group that in 2008 a group of people with a reentry program called Project Clean Slate came to Ms. Pugh and asked her, since you're getting reentry money from the DOC, is there any way that you can help?
Department of Corrections. Okay.
If she would be able to help fund through NERC in that Northside neighborhood, a reentry program called Project Clean Slate. Because in 2008, if you recall, Ms. Edwards, and I'm sure you do, there was a large number of African-American, Hispanic, and Asian men being released from prison that were going right back to the neighborhood.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. And there was an overwhelming surging amount where there wasn't enough halfway houses, there wasn't enough programs, and Miss, I was sitting in the room when this group was talking to Miss Pugh, and her concern was that she was using the money for an unwed mother's program, a house down the street.
Which she later evicted all those unwed mothers out of that home back in, I think it was February of 2009.
Yes, exactly. And so the money that was used for the reentry program was basically used for operating expenses and for the unwed mother's program, but her main concern is how she could recapture the funds.
Okay.
Which really didn't make any sense to me, because the funds are there for you to use for what you're supposed to use it for, and then if you're doing what you're supposed to do, you'll get some more. You know?
Okay.
And so she decided that this was not a good thing for her, but also And I haven't been able to confirm this, so I will just say allege in the beginning of this, but there are a bunch of LLCs floating around out there with a Northside publisher's name on it and Ms. Pugh's name. I can say Ms. Pugh. And I asked her, I sent her a request for information because federal funds were used to remodel houses and help give people grants. And it's another thing that I'm researching on because I want to find out the list of names that received the dollars from NERC, number one, if the files still exist and the computers are there. And number two, there's another agency in North Minneapolis, another community development agency, where it looks like the board of directors and their friends have been getting money for remodeling on their homes in North Minneapolis. So at what point does
You mean on projects, not their homes. They're not remodeling. I mean, they're not taking the money under the guise of helping the community and doing a self-profit, are they?
The money goes to their own particular homes. Their homes.
Okay.
So, yeah, and these are board members. And I am looking Northside Neighborhood. Let me just get here because housing. Oh, yeah, that was really easy to find.
Okay.
Yeah, right there. And so I am looking for that here, Northside Neighborhood Housing here. And I will just supporters. We'll go to supporters, okay? They have a list of supporters from American Family Insurance all the way down to Wells Fargo Housing Foundation. MHFA, which is Minnesota Housing and Finance Agency, is the Empowerment Zone. And donations from, you know, a lot of high-profile folks here. But there is not detail on this particular, and I would have to go call up their 990s in the studio, but I'm going to give you a list of the resident representatives.
Go ahead.
Mildred Phillips, Angela Tiffia, Gene Magnin, Daniel Tubido, Leon Rankin, Andre McGlory, George Nelson, Edward Manderville, Deanne Dickerson, Leah Proctor, and Jeanette Laverne.
Uh-huh.
And the business representatives, Mike Sell, Mamie Favor, Steve Lampham, Barry Clegg, Janine Lillard, and Teresa Thompson. And the government representatives, Jack Allison, Lynn Oregon, and Woody Dixon. Now, if someone was to go look at the 990s and see who the resident representatives were, the business representatives, and the government representatives, a lot of those names match because it's under a certain amount of money, and they gave it to them for to work on their homes. It has to be listed on their 990s. And I have the 990s right in front of me, but the next show, by the time I get this information back, probably will be by our next show, I'm going to go through this in detail and show a definite conflict of interest.
Wow. Okay. All right. Now, some of this was being worked through NERC while they were still solvent, if they've been solvent last 7 or 8 years.
This group has been a hidden group, an offshoot of NERC that was that probably might have done business a little bit better than NERC, that just stayed low profile.
It's
the same thing, that their mission is to renew pride, promote revitalization, inner city neighborhoods through the effort of local residents, acting in concert with public and private partnerships by emphasizing safe, affordable housing through home ownership for low and moderate income individuals, families, and underrepresented populations.
Okay.
But I'm telling you, when you call over there and try to get some information, and even if I change my name or something, it's just not a good thing.
Now, in a situation like this, we have it right here at Block Radio. What is both their address and what is their phone number? Maybe we have some of our listeners who may want to decide to call. Maybe they can get some loans to help refurbish or upgrade their home. What is the address and what phone number do we have for them?
I have a phone number here of 612.
Mm-hmm.
521-3581, or you can just drop in. They're on 1501 DuPont Avenue North.
And have been there for some time, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, they have.
By the way, I know over half of those names are better that you named, and in fact, there's a couple people there that are dead.
Yeah.
and I don't want to be disrespectful to the dead or to their families, but a couple of those people are deceased. When do you think the last time they revised the roster? Because they certified to the federal government that that board is active and alive. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So I'm looking at investment strength in the neighborhood, thanks to our partner organizations that have pledged their support with the following financial commitments. And let me just scroll up here while we're in the studio here so I can find the date on this because I want to be absolutely correct. Let me get right here. Here we go.
Okay.
And usually on these forms, you know, they don't have a date. And it's a shame because you don't know when they – okay, this is the North Side. This is actually – one of the links connected with North Neighborhood Housing Services, which is the Northside Home Fund, okay,
right.
Which is located downtown at 105 Fifth Avenue South. But it seems here that they have a working contributions of $65 million. I'm looking at the bottom line from the money they got from the American Dream down payment, Home and Neighborhood Initiative. City of Minneapolis, CFED by housing acquisition, gave them $1 million. Greater Metropolitan Housing Corporation, $500,000. City of Minneapolis, CFED Pilot Project Fund, $1 million. Our friend Franklin Bank, $20 million.
And that's who our guest last week at the top of the program, you see, that's what he was talking about when he brought forward that information about the tenuous situation facing Franklin Bank as it pertains to its solvency and what the collapse of Franklin Bank could do to the city of Minneapolis and all this bad paper, quote unquote, that they're holding. Now you have gotten into a entity which has been allowed to operate within community and continue to intercept and rip off, quote unquote, significant amounts of money. I mean, $65 million is not anything to sneeze at, Mr. Allen.
No, not at all. And so we're looking at this and, yeah,
and what was that address again in downtown Minneapolis? 105 what?
Let me go back there. 105 Fifth Street, if I'm not mistaken. Let me just go back and find it here because I had left that screen here. The brochure. If anyone wants to look it up on their computer, it's under Northside Brochure. But I typed in Northside Housing Services of Minneapolis, and about the third ranked thing on Google will be a PDF of this entity located at 105 Fifth Avenue South, Suite 200, which is CPED, Department of Community Planning and Economic Development.
Down in the quote-unquote so-called newer warehouse district, just down the street from the beautiful, bright new Guthrie Theater, which also was built with a lot of quote-unquote monies that were supposed to be directed into the into the neighborhoods. But we're not supposed to talk about that here in Minneapolis.
No.
So, I know we step on sacred ground when we talk in terms of the monies for of those projects important to the to the corporate community, because the Guthrie is one of the great cultural centers of quote-unquote our beloved city, our beloved Shangri-La, if you will.
And there's a map going around that has to do with the, I'm looking for it here, the Harrison neighborhood, because a couple people had approached me. The Harrison Neighborhood Association, Bassett Creek Valley, that area over there, some people not affiliated with the group, but they still feel that there's some redlining going on with the city of Minneapolis.
There is. Hollywood, certainly. Mm-hmm.
What's that now?
I said there is. I mean, they're absolutely on point. But, again, it's, you know, that they have to take the responsibility for, you know, driving the political engine that will reveal that. But it's been going on for quite some time. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And
by the way, that's also the same area where the proposed Viking Stadium is being looked at. Oops.
Exactly. And I was just looking at there's some old historical maps. They haven't got them up online yet that show that area over there as a red line Negro district.
Yes.
And and over more than 40% of the public housing concentrates in North Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was talking to this person. They said it'd be a great class action suit against the city of Minneapolis to figure out why all the public housing is concentrated in North Minneapolis in that area, actually. So
yes, including the so-called Heritage Park.
Yes.
And there's a whole history of that. If you go back 10 years, take a look at the documentation. You have to go on computer, though. A lot of documents have been shredded and et cetera. But there it is again. I mean, there's the smoking gun, What's so sad about this, Mr. Allen, is that so much of the development and construction was done without any African-American participation, and it's one of the things that has caused us here at On Point to be on our soapboxes for so long, if you will. You with your websites and et cetera, me with mine. And I'm really surprised, and it's almost too late. We're down to the last about 9 minutes.
9 minutes.
But again, the number is 1-877-572-4288. Again, 1-877-572-4288.
Hey, Mr. Edwards, I want to try something.
Go ahead.
The first caller at 1-877-572-4288 will win a $25 Target gift certificate.
That is a nice gesture on our part. Yes, yes, sir. First caller in will get that $25 gift certificate from Target. That's automatically gained, guaranteed. We're putting our reputation here at On Point on the line. We're just interested to know where the voices are as it pertains to this. This financial pyramid, really, this is a very excellent pyramid. And, you know, I'll tell you what, it goes all the way back to the days of a guy by the name of Don Risk. Don Risk used to be a councilman in the old first ward over there in northeast Minneapolis. He was a part of the northeast guys, if you will, Dick Miller, Joe Strauss, Don Risk. Louis DeMars, a lot of folks I know in that North Minneapolis area remember old Louis DeMars. And it goes all the way back to Representative John Souchard and the late Representative Jim Rice, if you will. I mean, take you back a long ways. Maybe, you know, in a couple of weeks we'll do a 7 or 8 minute historical piece on the political machine that is really continues to control the politics in North Minneapolis, and by extension, far too many places in the city of Minneapolis.
Yeah, and Mr. Rivers, just real quick, we're talking about the light rail in North Minneapolis. I was telling you about the gentleman named Ray. Okay.
Yeah.
This is what he just wrote on. Actually, it was the Willard Who Mail Serve, which is anybody that lives there. I tried to join it; they wouldn't let me join it, so I kind of snuck in so I get the emails anyway.
Okay.
So I just can't respond. So the Who Mail list. Which is the Willard Hay Neighborhood Organization, all these people on the list. Ray wrote, I'm the rain on all of your parades, on all y'all's parades. I'm just reading it like he's writing it, okay?
Okay.
Light rail is not intended to serve the north side. As I've stated repeatedly before, it is intended to bring the burb dwellers to the city, Mega Mall and beyond. I lived on the north side 65 years. When vibrant commercial enterprises thrive from Queens to the Mississippi River, the only one standing is Mickey Liquors now on Plymouth and Emerson. We don't have the discretionary income level to justify economically running light rail through Penn, et cetera, or stopping anywhere on the north side. That's his comment.
Wow. And by the way, and Mickey's used to be on Plymouth along with McDonald's that used to be on Lindale. But I just... You know, he's gone back a period of time. 65 years is quite a bit, but he's certainly laying out. And that's another piece that we're probably going to have to take a look at historically. The man, whoever it is, whoever the individual is on point.
Yeah, you know, I almost thought that we should sit in the back room at the light rail meeting and broadcast live from there.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that that's something, though the technical setup is such that it's probably almost would be prohibited, but
yeah,
it's certainly something we should ask about, and I think it should be. We probably don't have enough time for the meeting this coming, is it Thursday? Yeah, the 23rd.
Yeah,
but it's certainly something should be done, particularly in that you and I were told by a political representative that we were a little bit too far ahead of the curve, that jobs were not in the equation yet, there were a whole lot of other things, whatever that's supposed to mean, that should be done. But I think that, and we're down to about 3 minutes, I think that we certainly should ask for permission, just as we did last week, where we asked Mortensen's representatives to feel free to call in, go on the air, and explain, you know, the arrangements and deals that they're involved with. We really need to hear from our elected representatives, particularly in light of the meeting in Washington, the emergence of Impact, if you will, the political group, if you will. We need to get a feel for what it is that we can expect, what we should expect, and what we shouldn't expect in the African-American community. I think that's just fair, Mr. Al.
Yeah, and I wonder if they're going to, at this meeting on the 23rd, I wonder if they're going to ask people to write their questions on a piece of paper.
I think they will. I think that's a tactic that they have been, encouraged to do. And then that way you basically can control what gets read. That's why we went to great lengths on point during the school board debate, that questions would be asked from the audience uncensored, if you will. But censorship is the order of the day. There's a lot of, I hate to use the expression, there's a lot of colored money that's involved right now, and folks are looking to kind of get to payday, if you know what I mean. So we have to kind of do some restricting as it pertains to community flow.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Well, we have a little bit under 4 minutes left, Mr. Edwards, and I would just like to make this quick announcement to just remind everyone on October 5th on Minneapolis Television Network, Channel 17, Minneapolis only, you and I, Mr. Edwards, will be hosting the 5th Congressional forum for the five candidates running for Congress. We have confirmation from four. We're waiting for confirmation from Congressman Keith Ellison, whose office contacted me on Friday and asked would they have the questions in advance. I told them no. And so they just have to show up, and I gave them all the information. So we're waiting for a confirmation from his office or to find out if he'll be there or not. It'll be 7 p.m. on October 5th, Tuesday, October 5th, from 7 to 8, a live broadcast. And then afterwards, we'd like everybody to join us. We're going to have another meet and greet at a local establishment in downtown Minneapolis right over. And we'll get to have that information out on point here shortly. Okay. Also, Mr. Edwards, I'd like people to tune in tomorrow. If you're in Minneapolis, you can tune in to Minneapolis Television Network, Channel 17 again tomorrow for Black Focus, Through My Eyes with Mr. Ron Edwards, my co-host, who's our hour-long television show. Will deal with some of the issues here that we've talked about and other issues. And also, he writes a weekly column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. You can pick that up on your newsstands or get a subscription for a year every Wednesday, 52 weeks a year. They're very consistent. Also, check out my entity, the Independent Business News Network. You can go to IBNNnews.com, and also USA Radical Black, which is a national focus on African Americans. And that's www.usaradicalblack.com.
All right.
Anything else, Mr. Edwards? We have
On the column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, the longest standing and serving African American newspaper.
Hey, Mr. Edwards.
Minnesota.
Yes, sir. We have a call.
Almost too late. Nothing more we can do. But go ahead. Let him in. Go to let him in.
Hey, no, they hung up.
That's okay. That's really too bad. But tell them to hold their thoughts for next Saturday, because we will open up and we will expect to be able to open the phone lines right off the bat. Okay. But, Mr. Allen, looks like we're basically down to the last minute or so. We're sorry that caller didn't get through because the opportunity.
Well, here they are again. We got a minute. Let's see what they're talking.
Okay, let's see what happens.
Yes, caller, can I help you?
Hi, my name is Mustafa, and I'm calling from Minneapolis.
Okay, yes, your question.
Quickly.
My question is basically, I'm originally from Somalia, and my question basically is, Somali community, we have the same problems that you were talking about, and both of you write about it, and care about it. Maybe we have more than African American community. So why there's no way that you can help us? You know, when it comes to you brought up a couple of issues, public housing, and then these corrupted non-profit organizations. Last year, I counted about 80 Somali non-profit organizations that are all of them based in Minneapolis, 80.
Wow.
And so the system, they are involved in elections. They mislead people, you know, because most of people, most Somali immigrants, you know, older folks.
All right, we're down to the last 10 seconds, sir. Go ahead. What's your question?
Okay, that's my question. How can you help us, you know, come over some of these programs that we're having?
All right, we'll try to respond to it. We got about, 20 seconds left, Mr. Allen? Yeah, what we will do to this caller, and that he was good enough, and we need to get his name so he can get that certificate. We will talk about that at the top, Mr. Allen, of our program next Saturday. You don't think that's fair?
That's fair.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right. And okay. Thanks, everybody, and our show's ended.